Mobile Kintech Studio. It is Canuck Central, Dan Riccio, and Satyar Shah. Yes, I am back. For all those hoping to hear Bick again on the show. It was an interesting few days, but I guess the chirps never really stopped from Canuck Central listeners. This text from Twitter saying, with the picture of us here set up at the Sheridan Wall Center in the Mobile Kintech Studio, the glass of water is dangerously close to Reach's laptop. Please be careful. Well, yeah. Heard that one before.
People don't forget.
People do not forget the great water bottle spill of 2024.
No, it was one of the biggest spills on record. The spill heard around the world.
The spill heard around the world is very correct.
I know we did a mailbag yesterday, but because we're on location and we're going to get some Canucks alumni and former Canucks on the show, send your questions in, and we'll answer some questions and we'll sprinkle them in throughout the show. So ask your questions to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650.
It's always good to get your questions in. For those listening live, we encourage them, 650-650. All right. Canucks still feeling the effects of that loss to the New Jersey Devils. Let's get our Friday analyst take on it. It is Yannick Hansen. This analyst brought to you by the Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. Thanks for this, Yannick. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
We're doing pretty well. Canucks, though, not feeling so good about the way they lost to Carolina. And New Jersey, especially the 6-0 loss to the New Jersey Devils. How would you describe the Canucks' play the other night?
Yeah, that was not very good, to be blunt. Whether it was due, they've kind of been slipping a little bit. Got down against Carolina, but they found a way to get back in it. Against Jersey, they got exposed. New Jersey played fast, they played direct, and they played with skill, and they exposed Vancouver. They exposed them on the specialty teams. They exposed them when they turned the puck over. It was a lesson. Jersey is playing really well right now. They obviously consider themselves contenders or in that category. So you were shown how far we have to go. And it was a tale of two completely different teams going in two opposite directions right now. So hopefully it was an eye-opener, something they can use and say, hey, okay, we can't just pedal our way through and think everything is all well and good just because we're 4-1 and, what is it, 2 or 3 before they play Jersey. No, it's they lose a couple of games and they're below 500. So they need to tighten up. They need to correct some big mistakes, or not, maybe not mistakes, but especially teams needs to be a lot better than they have been. They're often at the difference between winning and losing. And, right now they're not getting it done.
Well, and as far as the way they're trying to play their system and trying to be on the rush a bit more, but at the same time they're not as good defensively as last season, do you see it as the problem being system changes or just an inability yet to establish the identity they established early on last year?
Well, there's no question when you look at a game like against Jersey, you're needing Demko. Silos is not playing the way he did last year. That gave us all hope. He got back into a game again, but you can probably put a couple of those goals on his shoulder where he should have probably made these saves. Yeah, they lose 6-0, but the difference between being in games and not in games, we talked about Kevin Larkinen, who he managed to find a way against Carolina. That game could have gotten out of hand too very easily, but he makes a couple of those stops, so it's only a 2-goal game, and now we get a goal, and now it's a one-shot game. So again, the goaltending obviously need to be good. That being said, I don't want to have to rely on my goaltender to win games. It's nice that they do it and they're there, so I'm not brushing anything aside and putting it all on C-Loves, but again, goaltending is at least when he's been in net, has not been where it needs to be, and that's probably why they haven't won a game with him in there. Coming back to the team part of it, there's no question. You look at the game, it wasn't good enough. Especially teams, like I mentioned, turnovers, commitment, engagement. There's a lot of things that are lacking when you lose 6-0. You love the response from Garling. I don't need everybody to go out and fighting everybody, but at least it shows you that, hey, this is not okay. Let's wake up here. It didn't have that effect, but it's nice to see that there are guys in that room that will take it a step extra to see if we can get everybody involved.
Is there, like, I'm looking at back at some of your game logs, and, you know, I remember early in the 2010-11 season, there's a loss to the Minnesota Wild in Minnesota 6-2, and shortly thereafter, you guys go on a six-game win streak and really start to put that season together, as we know how good it was. But, you know, was that kind of an early season wake-up call back then? Does a team need that every now and again?
It's impossible to play 82 games perfect, so they will happen. The problem is when you get in this sliding trajectory where it progressively gets worse, sometimes you still get the results, and it's like, okay, maybe it's not as bad as it is, and then you hit one of these games where it's a legitimate team, and they just expose you, and it's like, okay, now we need to wake up. Good teams find a way to use this and then turn it around from and say, okay, this is the bottom, and now we go up again. But again, the dangers are if you keep in this lull and you keep playing at a subpar standard, you collect a couple of losses here and there, you win some, and all of a sudden 10 games have gone by and you're pedaling around 500 hockey, which is not good enough. And you think you can just turn it on when you need it. This team needs to correct some mistakes. It needs to get some guys going too. It can't be the same three or four guys who gets the job done every single night. And we don't win if JT, Quinn Hughes, and Brock and Larkin aren't phenomenal. It can't be like that. There's too many passionate, and there's more guys that are playing well. I mentioned Garland, so I don't want to leave anybody out, but there's too many passengers, too many guys that are lost along for the ride right now that aren't really dragging the team in the right direction. And it's not a matter of I need fourth liners to score in bunches and all these things. No, you have a role, and that role is executed to a T, and then everything will take care of itself. So you're not talking about guys going out and being players they aren't. Just do your job, what you're expected to do, and then do that to an A+, and the team will win games. Problem is when, like I mentioned, too many passengers, now it becomes guys trying to overdo it, step out of their boundaries, and you get exposed a little bit.
Yeah, it feels like... Not to like be critical of Quinn Hughes, who's the captain and has been the team's most consistent and best player this year, but it felt like the other night, especially the game against his brothers, he tries to, like, when things aren't going well, Quinn tries to do a little bit too much himself. He plays kind of hero hockey and tries to get the ball rolling one way, and you know, that's good, that's admirable, but it seems as though there's a level of frustration that there isn't guys running with him right now, because even JT, like, he's been scoring, which is good, but his game has been not so great. We've seen some ugly turnovers and some things like that happening with JT in these last couple of games too, so it feels like Quinn Hughes is on an island sometimes right now.
Yeah, and again, you're lucky to have him and fortunate to have him. But again, when he's forced to play quarterback, forward, D, every position in between, generate offense, shut down on D, break out pucks, carry the rush, all these things, it becomes a little bit too much. And then again, scouting report is out on Vancouver. There's no question on that. Like, you need to contain Quinn Hughes. Because you don't, he will pick you apart, and he will play half an hour, and whenever he's on the ice, you're going to generate chances. So you need to shut him down when you're playing against Vancouver, and it becomes a lot easier when he is one of two or three players you need to worry about. And that's coming back to the passenger. It happens. Good players, they want to win, and he's looking around right now and, like, need a little more run support here. He's not getting it, so you try to do a little bit extra, and that... Like, it is a very good league, so it becomes very hard to do. It can be done, but again, he needs help. There's no question about that. And whether he takes on too much, I'm not even going to dive into that, because of the way he's playing and what he's doing. I leave him alone, not even worry about him. He has been showing what he can do and what he does for this team for so long now. And even when they aren't playing well, he's right there and doing his thing. So he's the least of the worries right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he has been fantastic, but at the same time, like Reach was saying, trying to do a bit too much sometimes. But that is what great players sometimes do. They force the issue. And I think what people want to see, they wish they saw Pettersson force the issue as opposed to kind of, you know, be on the perimeter of the play for the most part. And I know we spent a lot of time talking about his game and where he's at. You can take it two ways, right? You try too hard, or perhaps sometimes you end up not doing enough. But at the same time, when we try to look at a player who's gone on a prolonged slump now and he's trying to get out of it, but then, you know, you hear the entire market, they're frustrated, people talk about trades already, so it's getting really hot, and it's only 9 games in. When you get a contract that big, I know it's a different situation, Yannick, but is there an element of you put way too much on your shoulders when you start feeling the pressure already 9 games in?
I don't know if that can be credited anymore, because it pretty much started last year, right around the time he signed, actually. I can't remember how far after that it kind of took a turn, but he weren't great the last 15, 20 games in the regular season. He was obviously missing in the playoffs, and now it's beginning of season as well, 10 games in now. It's a lot of games, and you have to start looking at number one now. And why is it that Petey isn't playing the way he did at the beginning of the year? And again, from the outside, you can only speculate. You'd hope that there would be some answers in the coaching room or in Petey's own house, if you will, because it's just not good enough. And it's too long. Again, we've talked about line mates and all these things that aren't working out, but when he has chances to play with Brock and JT, then it just seems like he's pulling them down with him as well. And he needs to be a player that elevates his line mates. It's that simple. And I don't expect him to turn in third and fourth liners into 30 goal scorers. That's not what we're asking here either. But he's seen significant amount of time with different players. He needs to find a way to get better. It's that simple.
The thing I wanted to follow up on was we've noticed that his speed isn't quite there compared to last year. We noticed his shot velocity is not there compared to last year. He's obviously not shooting the puck enough. So when you see those two things, like, where does that kind of indicate an injury, or just mentally you're not doing the things you're supposed to do?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm happy that it wasn't around when we were there. I'm not skating fast enough, shooting hard enough. It's a lot of little metrics we're using right now. Again, we haven't seen him unleash any one-timers at all, a power play or wherever. And we know how good of a shot he has. Is that because he's not getting to opportunities? It is because he's not shooting when he is in prime spots? Or is it because he's simply just not as strong as he was a year ago? I hope it's not the last one. And I hope it's somewhere in between where, okay, game just isn't going for him and he's not seeing the pucks in the situation he'd like to be in with him. But again, when you start tampering with, okay, why is he not skating as fast and shooting as hard anymore? Well, that's what makes him elite. If you take away his shot quickness, velocity, his speed in skating, well now it's not an $11.6 million player anymore. So I hope it's not that. And then again, we're talking about, again, mental part of the game that just aren't there for him right now. And it's not a physical part, because again, hopefully he can figure out the other part himself and then get back to where he needs to be. And it's not a question of him sitting back and resting on his new deal.
Yeah. And it's hard to see where this team is headed as long as Pettersson is in this sort of funk. And to put JT along with him, you know, even though JT's got 9 points in 9 games, you know, we know his game can be better, it can be sharper, he can clean up some of those turnovers and those kinds of things. He's always been a guy, at least when he's in Vancouver, where he scores. But the problem is, the Canucks, against Carolina and New Jersey, you go up against other teams' top six, legitimate top six, and the Canucks are getting crushed in those minutes. So as long as this happens, you know, the Canucks being a Stanley Cup contender, it's hard to see that. But at the same time, we're still so early. Like, you don't have to be hitting the ground running in October like they were a year ago. This is, as Rick Tocchet has alluded to, we're in good shape at 4-2-3, but we've got to find our game here in the pretty near future in order to feel good about ourselves going forward.
Yeah, you do. Again, they're not in a bad spot. 2 games above 500. A lot of teams are fluttering out of the gates as well. The problem with the top six and being underwater there is when you look at the team right now, there is two top six players on this team, and that's JT and Brock. Everybody else is not playing up to that standard. So when you roll out your lineup against other teams, you can see why they're having such a hard time generating, creating. You need DeBrusk. I'm still 10 games in. He should have another 10 before we really start judging him and see what he's doing, because mm-hmm. new place and all these things. But he needs to get going as well, because he's a player that hopefully could complement Petey and turn it into a two-player top six and a four-player top six kind of thing. And then you can sprinkle in the third winger on each of those two lines. But you need more weight up in that top six. There's no question about that. And as long as it keeps fluttering, you will have mixed results. Yeah, you will win games because it is a talented team and they have some phenomenal players. But again, that will only get you to the playoffs, and then that's it. And that cannot be a success criteria for this team anymore. It's not one and done. They need to get in and they need to make some noise. And in order to do that, you need to be deep. You need to be better. Your best player needs to be at their best. They need to be your best players. So there's a lot of things to work on, and they can rely on this. We're not in a bad spot in any way, but they're two losses away from being a 500 hockey club. So it's not like it's all fine and dandy and they have all this runway to run out and try things on. They need to correct these things, because some of them is not just that, oh, we're not playing well right now. No, Petey has been in this for months now. So it's something more than just, oh, we will get over this, because we just revert back to where we were 6, 7, 8 games ago. They need to solve some critical things.
Absolutely. And I mean, ultimately, as much as we sit here and talk about details, it all comes down to their top end players being able to regain their form, especially Pettersson. As far as one of the positive developments, and I was thinking about this earlier today, like, you went from being a solid fourth line player that was there for energy, that forechecked well, to all of a sudden becoming a legitimate third line contributor that can move up into the top six. And we look at a guy like Kiefer Sherwood, who went from being a kind of a journeyman guy who's been a fourth liner for the most part, and now we're seeing him kind of emerge and play a bigger role. Do you kind of see him being capable of kind of doing what you did, going from, you know, playing on that fourth line to becoming kind of more of a middle six forward?
That has to be the goal for him. Like I said, again, roles have changed a little bit. When I started out, we had a designated role on our team for the fighters. So it's obviously gone away. So you need players who can jump in, fill roles. And a lot of times for bottom six wingers, in order for us to stay engaged in games and get involved in games, you need to develop some specialties. You're not going to play power play. There's not a lot of time for that or space for those players. So you need to develop your game sound defensively first, so coaches will trust you. That'll get you some penalty killing minutes, which will get you more ice time. And then you kind of go from that fourth line role player in and out to now you're a legitimate fixture on a third line. Once you land there on your legitimate third liner, you can start thinking about, okay, I'm a middle six right now, where I can bounce up into the top six in a pinch, fill in some shifts here and there. It's a lot easier to start determining where players land once they have their footing in the NHL, once they're comfortable where they are, where they're relied upon every single night. They're playing for 70, 75 games a season, if not more, if they stay healthy. When you're bouncing in and out of the lineup, it's very, very hard to gauge and judge players as to what their capability and ceilings are. And you can't even go back to say, okay, what type of player was this in junior or in the minors, because you have to develop. Most of us don't get to play the same role from when we're little all the way till we retire, because there's only so many offensive roles available and they're taken. So you kind of have to develop and adjust as you go along in your career to kind of stick around. So I think it's a little early to judge Kiefer on where he'll end up and what his ceiling is. But it's good to see that you're starting to get some production, getting some consistency in this game.
Joshua should be back, if not tomorrow against San Jose, at some point over the course of this road trip. Tockett saying he's day-to-day now. How much does Dakota Joshua help this team?
I would hope it would solidify a line a little bit more. I don't like the fluctuation so much, rotating wingers with centers and all these things. You hope that, again, the Garland, Bluger, and Joshua was a great example of a third line that can almost carry teams at certain points, and it'll give you a for certain almost every night. So hopefully he will come in and land on a line where you will have a little bit less rotation.
One thing that happened today, Rick Tocchet, when he was speaking, he mentioned got to get back to fundamentals and alluded to bad habits creeping back into the squad a little bit. Does that raise a red flag for you at all?
Not if he nips it in the bud, because that is what we talked about for a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Bad habits, cheating for offense, looking for cookies and all these things. So it's never good when you hear that. Again, they have not done it under him. It's been very, very one and done, and then he's found a way to correct it real fast. So the fact that he's mentioned it means obviously he's on top of it. So no, it shouldn't be an issue. Not under him, the way they found a way to play.
Yannick, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
Yeah, take care.
There is Yannick Hansen joining us here, as he does every single Friday on Canuck Central. And not too worried about Rick Tocchet bringing up the bad habits and wanting to nip that in the bud, as they say. It's Tocchet really seems to have the pulse of this team, but as we mentioned earlier in the show, this does feel like an interesting moment in time of Rick Tocchet's coaching tenure here in Vancouver.
It does, and it's the first real challenge he's gone through, as far as not a great start to the season, some big players underachieving, namely Elias Pettersson, and them trying to, you know, get back to their identity again. And maybe it's just a small bump in the road, but there hasn't been a lot of adversity for him as a head coach, really, and this is the first real bit that he's going through here.
It does, you know, as much as, you know, it falls on the coach right now, you know, so much of everything that goes on with this team does revolve around the conversation about Elias Pettersson. And, you know, it's tough because, you know, we don't want to focus too much on one player. We know hockey is more about just one player. But ultimately, and everybody knows this, like, the ceiling of this team and the idea that they are a cup contender revolves around Elias Pettersson being Elias Pettersson and not whatever version of whatever he is right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know,
it's exhausting talking about it.
I don't mean it because you brought it up, but it's, you know, I had the same type of exasperation yesterday. I mean, I don't think there's a single person who's a Canucks fan who disagrees that Pettersson isn't at his best, this team's ceiling is limited, right? Like, that's obviously true. They need him to be at his best. I mean, it's
building,
like,
this team as a Stanley Cup contender, Pettersson is a massive part of that.
Show me a team where their highest paid player isn't playing or playing well and they're going to win a championship.
Don't see one, really.
It's like the most captain obvious take,
like,
right?
I used to say that about the Florida Panthers. Like, how are they ever going to build a Stanley Cup contender around Sergei Bobrovsky? Mm-hmm. And it required Bobrovsky finding his old form in order for them to build back into a Stanley Cup contender,
Cup contender. That's a guy that was in the conversation for the Vezina, right? Like, that's how he played, right?
It was also, when he first started a contract with Florida, it was the worst contract in the league. Remember?
Exactly. Right? Yeah, now, and hey, man, maybe ultimately you don't want to pay a goaltender that much money, right? Like, I totally get it. But yeah, if he wasn't playing at a high level, they weren't going to win.
Yeah.
And it's even more so for a guy like Pettersson, who they're paying to be their frontline center and has shown the potential to be that. And, like, he has to get back to it.
It's as simple as that, but I guess easier said than done. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Coming up, we'll get to more of your questions if you have them. There was a mailbag Friday on a Thursday yesterday because we are live on location today. And so we do have time for more questions as we go here. If you're listening live, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, you can get in some of your questions there, and we'll answer them through the 5 o'clock hour. It is Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. You are listening to Canuck Central. We are back on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the mobile Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? We are live on location from the Canucks Autism Network Draft Night. The Pro-Am is going on this weekend. Yearly, it is an incredible event supporting the Canucks Autism Network. Over $1 million raised just with this event yearly. So it is pretty incredible what that's able to do to support those living with autism across our great province. And some of the work is really impressive and really integral for families across this province.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know times are not easy for everybody. And I know as far as monetarily, sometimes it's difficult to get involved. So those that have, you know, it's great on you. But even raising awareness, listening, being part of the discussion goes a long way as well. So it's really an important cause, and we're delighted to be here.
So a lot going on with the Vancouver Canucks as they head out on this California road trip, starting in San Jose tomorrow. And I mean, it's pretty obvious, Sat. Like, tomorrow feels like a get right spot for the Vancouver Canucks. Like, if you could have a get right spot, the San Jose Sharks are supposed to be that right now. And I know they've won a couple of games here. They've played a little bit better. Jake Walman doing the gritty. He's been on fire for them. He's got a couple of three-point games in recent memory here, as the Sharks have won three in a row after going winless for the first six or seven of their season. But, you know, this is a spot where not just, like, the result matters, but you do want to see a little bit better of a process here from the Vancouver Canucks.
100%. And even if they win the game, and even if they play well and win the game, I know a lot of people won't be convinced. And it's not about convincing anybody. It's about getting back to fundamentally who you are as a team.
Yeah.
Don't give San Jose anything.
Yeah.
Make sure that you show you're the better team and play as complete a game as possible. And if that's, you know, winning 5-0, 6-0, or even winning 4-2 or whatever it is.
Or 10-1.
Or whatever. Like, maybe they do the same thing they did last year. But to me, I'm not really too caught up in how many goals they score. It's more about, like you said, the process. Can you play a sound game again? And those are the things we want to see. And they should win the game. Like, if they go and play spectacular and a goaltender has the performance of the season in the NHL, okay, those things happen. But they shouldn't be going into San Jose and losing, especially on the heels of losing 6-0.
It's a spot, like, you should have success in, of course. You want to see them get to these fundamentals. And as much as Elias Pettersson has been a talking point, you know, if it were any other season, Jake DeBrusk would probably be the biggest talking point around the Vancouver Canucks. You're the star signing of the offseason, signs a 7-year deal at $5.5 million per, and he's pointless in his last four, still zero goals for the year. Two of those assists on the season are secondary assists, if you're looking at that kind of a thing. It's not been an easy transition for Jake DeBrusk, and as Rick Tocchet said and mentioned today when asked about it, Jake's trying to score the goal when we need him to do this, this, and this, and believe that the goals will come after he does this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to go from A to Z without doing everything else in between.
Yeah, and I think he's also not doing enough of the things that he's good at doing,
yeah,
and that's shooting the puck and being more of a volume shooter than he has been. And we're not seeing that right now from him. The game isn't as direct. He's clearly overthinking things, and that's something that Tocchet spoke to him about. It's so early still that I'm not concerned. There has been flashes, right?
Like,
yeah.
The chance, man, that would have been an incredible goal if he scored it against Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's got good pace. He's a good forechecker. Has decent size, too, right? He has a little bite to his game. Like, there's a lot of things to like about his game.
Good mind for the game.
The question with him always was, can he find another level in Vancouver? You know, can he go from being a guy who scores 20-25 to 30 goals?
Yeah.
And it's way too early to know if he can be that or not. And the reality is, for 20-goal guys, and I said this a lot this past week, so forgive me if you heard it numerous times, but 20-goal scorers don't score in at least 60-62 games.
Yes.
A year. So there are a lot of stretches where 20-goal scorers aren't going to score. So if he's a 20-goal guy, fine. but the hope is for him to be beyond that. And I don't think we've seen that yet. But also, we haven't even seen him getting back to being the player he was, much like Petey, to some extent. So I'm not concerned with him, especially because it's early yet. But ultimately, the question with him is going to be, is he ultimately a difference-making top six player, or just a nice complimentary guy that they committed 7 years to?
If you have questions for the show, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. If you're listening live, we appreciate your questions. Before we get to some of those, and maybe some of it is due to, like, maybe Joshua and Forbert are able to draw back into the lineup as early as tomorrow, though I doubt it because they probably would have made a roster move today if they felt Joshua was good enough to get into the lineup tomorrow. But were you surprised to see zero changes to at least the way they practiced today with the forward lines?
I was, actually. Considering how bad the performance was, usually that's grounds for a bit of a shakeup line-wise, lineup-wise, and we saw nothing. I was surprised at that.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that's how they ultimately line up tomorrow. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, right? So we'll see. But is it the coach just wanting to stick with it, giving the guys another chance? Or is he being a little stubborn? I wouldn't call it stubborn necessarily because it's so early in the year. But yeah, I expected maybe not to see Baines back with Patterson and Garland.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe on the back end, maybe mix up the pairs a little bit, considering how much they struggled. But we know Hughes and Hronek want to play together, and they're staying together.
Yeah.
And right now, Susi and Myers are really struggling.
Really struggling. And Susi almost...
Even more so.
Anybody.
But I thought, for sure. But even Myers, like you saw.
Myers had a really tough night.
On the first goal, he bites off the face-off, and next thing you know, it's a two-on-one going the other way. It's like, that's exactly what the coach talked about. Don't dive in, and here he is diving in, like early in the game.
And that's what Myers does when he's forcing it.
Right? Yeah.
When he plays his simple game, as we saw for a lot of last year, you don't see that as much.
No, and that's the thing. So I was surprised. We'll see if that sticks, though. And, hey, if they all bounce back and play great, fantastic. If they get off to a not great start with the same lineup in the first period against the Sharks, you kind of wonder, is this the right way to go about things?
Yeah, it is an interesting one from Rick Tocchet. I mean, we'll see, because they are expecting Dakota Joshua back in the near future. But for now, at least what we saw at practice today, the lines did stay the same. So that an interesting wrinkle as they head out to the West Coast, California coast, of course. All right, Daniel Campbell with this question. Jake DeBrusque was a star signing. 5 schmil over 7 is not star money. Not necessarily. My point being was he was the biggest signing of the offseason.
He was the marquee addition of the offseason.
Yes.
You know, $5.5 million isn't a star money, but it's still close to $40 million in total money. It's the second longest contract
they've
committed. 7 years
is a star term. You don't give a lot of guys 7 year term.
Yeah, so the term is significant, right? So it's a significant addition. And if he scores 20 goals, gets 50 points every year, that's, I think, more than fine for what he's getting paid, because again, he's not star money. But this team, when we looked at where they were this past year, losing Elias Lindholm, who was a big time difference maker for them in the playoffs, and you look at having a legitimate driver or somebody else that can be a difference maker, that can get maybe 30 goals. We know Lindholm and DeBrusque are completely different players, but DeBrusque can score goals.
Yeah.
If he can be a 30-goal guy and you get surplus value at $5.5 million, that's what you're aiming for, because you have a guy like Pettersson making 11.6. Hughes is going to get a big contract when this one ends, right? So you're going to have to get guys that provide really good value for you, not just earn their money below the lineup. Because I don't care if a guy just gets me 20 goals every year.
Yeah.
And I have him signed for 7 years. I don't care to give a 20-goal guy 7 years. You know, like, I want somebody to be about 25, 30 if I'm giving them a 7-year commitment. Because you can always find 20-goal guys for 1 or 2 years as stopgaps, right? Can you get somebody that can actually take a step for this team? And it's way too early to determine that with DeBrusque.
Well, there's got to be a lot more to your game than just the goals as well in that case. Because, I mean, Daniel Sprong was nearly a 20-goal scorer each of the last two seasons, right? So not every 20-goal scorer is created equal.
100%.
But DeBrusque is meant to be a guy that can help on the power play, can help on the penalty kill in situations, and also be a top-six forward. Help your top-six drive play. And right now, your top six isn't driving play.
Yeah.
And that's a big issue for the Vancouver Canucks. All right, continuing through with some more questions. And this one here. Sorry, Sai, you're going to have to take
it. Yeah, this one says, Yale and Oak Ridge, aren't the Sedins there to be the Pettersson whisperers? He'll be fine. Vancouver fans are always throwing players under the bus like JT. That's Yale and Oak Ridge. So the thing is, just because the Sedins are Swedish doesn't mean that there's necessarily this close bond between the Sedins and Pettersson. And I'm not saying there isn't. I'm just not sure that there is that type of relationship there where that influence from the Sedins is so big and impactful on Pettersson. Like, I don't know if that's the case.
It's it hasn't felt like that.
Yeah.
And ultimately, like, no coach is going to get Pettersson out of this, right? Like, this comes down to Elias Pettersson.
It's like Torts said, right? You can't take you to a store to buy confidence, yeah. Right? Like, you have to figure it out. It has to come from within at some point, right? And I think one thing Henrik always mentioned when we spoke to him about confidence, he said a lack of confidence comes from a lack of preparation. That's how he viewed it. Everybody has a different view of it, because he always thought that if you've done everything humanly possible, you show up prepared, you should have confidence.
Yeah.
What reason do you have to not be confident? If I'm not confident, that my preparation wasn't good enough. But they had elite preparation. That's why they were such good standard bearers, or at least they were viewed as such great standard bearers, because no matter what, every single offseason, they approached every single day as a day for them to get better, as a day to up their standards, right? And you even saw it throughout the season with how they showed up and how hard they worked, their details and their practice habits. And that's really what great players do. That's what Hall of Fame players need to do, right? So he viewed it as, if I don't have confidence, because I didn't work hard enough. I'm always confident because I've always done the work to show up. Every player is different.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great mindset to have. I don't know if you can impart that mindset. You have to kind of find it yourself.
It's, I wouldn't say Pettersson's been called out for his practice habits, but it's not as though Rick Tocchet has glowed about his practice habits either, in the same way that he's glowed about the way Quinn Hughes prepares himself, the way that Quinn Hughes is striving to be the best on the planet at what he does. He's pushed Pettersson to spend some extra time on the ice at practice. You know, they've talked about having a plan for him to spend extra time on the ice. So, you know, I think there is at least a little something there with practice habits, not just for Pettersson, but I think that's a larger point for the Canucks here early this season.
Yeah, absolutely. This text, unsigned question, how long do you think the window is for this core? If Pettersson is still in a funk come January or February, can you afford to write off this year? Question mark. Fair question, right? Because JT's now 31 years old. Demko hasn't even played a game yet, but only has one more year left beyond this. And considering everything that's happened with the injuries, certainly no guarantee he's going to be here beyond this contract. But you have Hughes and Pettersson still.
Yeah.
Besser doesn't have a contract beyond this year. I understand the question, and it's a great question, and it's fair. I think this year is especially with how wide open the league seems this year. Like, I know there's some good teams, but I don't think anybody, you know, to me looks like unbeatable.
No.
I don't think anybody looks like, you know, a clear powerhouse, like clear cut number one favorite. I don't think that exists this year. So I think there's a chance. But the catch of that is a trade going to get you closer to being a contender? Like, if you're trading, the reason the Canucks would be a Stanley Cup contender would be that Pettersson and JT play at a high level down the middle. So you have those two centers.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of what they're going to be as a team, right?
Yeah.
If you trade Pettersson, are you finding a center that's going to be able to play at a number one level, number two level? Because you're not winning a Stanley Cup with having, just a true second line center. You need somebody that's like a two almost bona fide firsts.
Yeah.
And, you know, God bless Teddy Bluger. I love what he's done this year. And I think he's establishing himself as a third-line center, but he's not Elias Lindholm.
No.
So it's not like you're going from Pettersson to Lindholm to Bluger and Suter, right? And then maybe you're getting, you know, a couple scoring wingers, right? If you're trading Pettersson, you're not finding a player who's going to put you over the top this year. You're not. It's just not happening. I don't think there's a trade for you to make today that makes you a better contender if you're moving Pettersson. You could get a better long-term package, sure, yeah. Right? You can view it that way, but you're not rebuilding.
Well, I know it's been brought up before, but like the Jack Eichel trade, And I don't even think Buffalo did bad in the Jack Eichel trade, considering the circumstances.
Yeah, they got Alex Tuch.
They got Krebs, who at the time was a good prospect. They got another first on top of that. But you know what they haven't found since moving Jack Eichel?
Number one center. Yeah, and Jack Eichel, what did he do? He won a Stanley Cup with
He won a Stanley Cup.
You trade Pettersson, chances are he's winning a cup before you do with the team he goes to,
exactly.
Right? Like, there's a better odd of that because the Canucks, come hell or high water, need Pettersson to be a star, superstar. Yeah. And if he is, and they have JT, then they have a chance. And honestly, like, the only thing you can do is wait this out. You have no other recourse. Like, we can be critical. You can talk about, okay, do you want to bench him a game even? Some people bring that up. Do you want to demote him? Do you want to take him off the power play? Like, okay, fair game. Talk about all those things if you want to have an opinion on it. But the trade thing is not... If you're trading Pettersson, you're not going anywhere this year in the playoffs. You're just not, right? And if Pettersson's not playing better, you're not going anywhere either. So the best outcome is for him to play better. You need to figure this out.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's getting to him, whether it's him figuring, like, this has to get figured out at some point this year. And I don't think there's a trade in the works, and I don't think the trade is going to happen this year. Like, honestly, like, I think for all the talk about it, it's not a realistic situation. And when you really sit down and think about it and be honest with yourself, the only solution is him playing better.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't play better, yeah, I mean, God help everybody, like, for sure, right? Because he's making 11.6 for long term, and maybe you have to take a longer term approach. If you get to a point you're trading Pettersson, guys, you're looking at, can we compete in 1 or 2 years?
Yeah.
Do you take a bit of a step back to try to reload again?
Doesn't make a lot of sense when you have Demko and Hughes' contracts.
Well, I mean, even again, we have to see Demko play first, right? That's the other thing. But maybe that is the best road they take. But I don't think they're going to determine that this season at the deadline.
Yeah.
That's something they may think of doing in the offseason, right? I don't think anything's going to happen here during the trade deadline. If it's a horrible year, who knows what happens in the offseason, right? Because you may have to pivot as a team if things aren't going the way you want to go. Like, do you have to take a step back to take a leap forward? Or do you push forward?
Yeah.
But we have to wait to the end of the season, guys. Like, I know people don't want to hear that, but you just have to wait this out.
You have to wait this out. You have to hope Elias Pettersson finds old form. Again, this was a guy that was on pace for over 100 points last year when, you know, the All-Star game hit. He was an All-Star. Then after All-Star Week, whatever happened there, he was second star of the month in January, if I do remember correctly. That's when that crazy game against the New York Rangers happened. Yeah. He scored that great dangle goal, and you know, he seemed to be really playing at an incredibly high level, and then it just completely dropped. And he signed the contract. You thought he might come out of it then. It did not happen. So... that's where you're at right now with Elias Pettersson, but your best bet is for him to get back to where we all think and know he can be.
Yeah.
This text saying Tage Thompson is a number one center, Dan. Look at what he's doing this year. Look, Tage Thompson is a credible scorer. I don't know if he defends well enough to be considered a true number one center.
Yeah, like a bona fide Stanley Cup winning number one center lineup. I'm not sure he's that, but he's...
Like, he scores like a number one center.
Yeah, he does.
Don't have a problem with that, but... Yeah, as far as defensively, like, there's a reason the Sabres have been still not quite good with Tage Thompson as their number one center.
People always bring this one up. What about Brady for Pettersson? It's just I don't know if that's realistic. I mean, that's something that, like, obviously you're talking, but it's not a center; it's a winger.
Yeah, it would be a little bit different.
It'd be different. I mean, but hey, you're talking impact player, right? But again, I think that's more fantasy than anything that's realistic, right?
Yeah.
And I know people bring that up quite often. Like, obviously, there are one-for-one trades that if you propose them to anybody in a hypothetically, you'd be like, oh, yeah, you know what, I'd do that, for instance, right? I just don't know how realistic those things are.
A lot of times, those one-for-one trades never actually materialize.
Unless it's a Larson for Hall. Weber for P.K. Subban.
Weber for P.K. Subban. Johansson for Seth Jones.
Yeah.
They're all younger.
Yeah.
A lot younger.
Yeah, it were.
Guys
in
their mid-20s, you don't normally see
No, it doesn't happen. Like, especially like number one centers like that. No, it doesn't happen.
Generally, it happens either when they've just gotten their second contracts or around the time that they are about to get that second contract that a team is deciding whether or not they actually want to give that. Maybe outside of the Weber for Subban one. But, you know, it's a really tough spot that the Canucks find themselves in, because as long as Pettersson doesn't hit the level we think he can, You know, you're kind of stuck in a bit of a murky middle type of situation where your power play's not going to hit at a high level. You're not going to be able to go toe-to-toe with the best teams in the league like you would want to. You know, and that's where, even though Lindholm isn't playing well in Boston, like, that's where you're feeling Lindholm's loss a little bit, because even though Pettersson wasn't going towards the end of last season and in the playoffs, you still had a bona fide number two center playing behind Miller to sort of take some shutdown minutes and play that end of the end of the ice.
The Canucks don't go to game seven against Edmonton if it wasn't for Lindholm.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. I'm not even sure they get past Nashville.
That doesn't mean I would have given him the contract that he got from the Boston Bruins, but
no, it is a fact. The fact, if he wasn't with the Canucks, they don't beat the Nashville either. Like, he was one of their better players against the Preds. You know, like, he won them one game essentially, right? Like, he was fantastic throughout that series, and even great against the Edmonton Oilers. Without him, you know, the Canucks don't go anywhere near where they went. And even so, people say, you know, he didn't do enough, or the team didn't do enough, considering what they gave up to acquire him, right? But you're right, a big loss, and that's something that would helped insulate Pettersson not being at his best. The Canucks don't have that insulation now.
Yeah.
Now, he needs to, you know, get back to his best. And one of the reasons I love this market so much is, you know, a player struggles quickly for a while, and it's like, trade him, get rid of him, fire this guy, fire that guy. Somebody comes in and plays well, it's like, do you extend him? Do you give him more money? Who do you want to keep? So Austin and Langley says, when do we start talking Lanky extension? So Kevin Lankinen has had a handful of starts for the Canucks. He's been stellar, no doubt, right?
He's
been stellar.
Top five goalies in the league?
Great. He hasn't even had 10 starts for the Canucks yet, right? And we're talking extension. But
he's not even eligible for an extension until January.
It's like, no, we can talk about it, though. But I do think, in the backdrop of all this, you know, all the struggles and the Demko situation, it's a very fascinating situation to watch this year for Kevin Lankinen, right?
Yeah.
Because if Lankinen is truly finally emerging and getting on the spotlight as a bona fide starting goaltender who's well above average, but it's his first year doing so, and he's still young, the Canucks are in a unique situation to sign him and keep him long term at a decent rate.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to be able to demand Swayman money.
No.
He's not going to be able to demand $6 million plus. At best, we're talking $5
million. Yeah.
Which you look at and say, well, Demko's making five.
At best, $5
million. But Demko's making five, but the line has changed. Like, Joey DeCord's getting five, right? Yeah. Like, all these guys getting five, or even less, maybe four and a half, right? If Lankinen is for real and you sign him to an extension for around four and a bit million, you could get a star goaltender locked up long term, right? Way too early to make that determination. Way too early to say that's going to happen, that he's going to be that good. But to answer the question, I do think that's something that could be the upside here. That not only is he great for you this year, that you sign a bona fide, legitimate, arriving, emerging number one goaltender to a cheap contract with term.
It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. More coming, as we are live on location at the Sheridan Wall Center ahead of the Canucks Autism Network Pro-Am Draft Night. It is Canucks Central. We welcome in our next guest, former Vancouver Canuck, joining us tableside, regular on the show. It's Chris Higgins. What's happening, Chris?
Hey, guys. Pretty cold. Yeah. Just coming from outside.
it's feeling like winter already, isn't it?
It's cold out there.
Yeah, we're getting the fall weather. We got all the rain through Halloween and everything else, and here we are. It's hockey season, I guess.
Yeah.
And we're starting to feel it. First nine games for the Vancouver Canucks, and everybody's really excited. But let's get in touch with what you're hearing and doing as part of the Can Pro-Am Draft Weekend. You're getting drafted again here tonight, Higgy. How does it feel?
Great. I've been involved for a number of years now with this tournament. You know, obviously, you know, with my sister, it's close to the heart. So, and I love it. The you know, the format with the draft, I've never seen anything like that before at other charity tournaments before. It's just a great idea. They had me on the hot stove with my old line mates, Mason Raymond and Ryan Kessler, which was it was a lot of fun to talk about our years together and you know, how much it meant to us.
Was that the most fun you had playing hockey?
Yeah, it was up there. I think you know, growing up in Long Island, hockey really wasn't that big in that area at that time. So to make the first World Junior team was up there too. Mm-hmm. You know, play for the U.S. for the first time. But certainly at a professional level, you know, my years in Vancouver were amazing.
Do you plan on getting a stick in on Kessler this weekend if you match up with him on the ice or what?
I hope so. I don't think he moves as too well as he used to, so it should be a little easier.
Yeah, that's always the fun part of the weekend. It is supporting an incredible cause. If you'd like to be a part of it and join in with a donation, CanucksAutism.ca, the Canucks Autism Network, doing incredible work across the province to help those living with autism. All right. Well, we wanted to get your take on the Vancouver Canucks here a little bit, Higgy. And first nine games, been a little bit up and down. What are you seeing from the team so far?
Well, I'm not surprised. I thought they would, I think, one thought, like maybe they start well, with how well things went last year. But what I probably would have bet money on was probably a little bit of an up and down start. I think, with how well they played last season, I don't think they're taking anyone by surprise this year. Yeah. So, from the first game on, everyone's taken them seriously. Some guys had some big years, obviously, with Quinn winning the Norris and, Tockett and recognized JT Miller having a big year. The secret's out that there is some talent on this team, but yeah. I think they're still trying to find each other as the guys roll in here.
Christian crushes us every year.
He
scored like six goals against us last year.
Man.
Christian Aquilini is the biggest sniper around.
He can score, man. Kid has some talent. Yeah. The thing too, when you have such a good year as a team as well, where you establish your identity right away and go far in the playoffs, the identity doesn't just carry over, right? You have to reestablish that. And is that sometimes a challenge to reestablish that right away to the same level that it was established last year?
Yeah, and this is one thing I don't think falls on the coaching staff or management. I think the pieces are in place there. I really believe in the coaching staff that the Canucks have. And, the table's been set for the players. Like, this is a player's year, in my opinion. The big players have to take big steps and take control of games and win games by themselves and assert their dominance. And, there's been a couple of guys I think they've been a little bit slow out of the gate, but that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for their star players to grab the game, grab the team, put them on their back, and win games for them.
Yeah, the biggest story in the market that nobody can get away from is Elias Pettersson right now. And, it goes back to last year a little bit, but even more so these first nine games, he's not shooting the puck as much. You're really almost feeling the lack of confidence when you watch him. I don't think there's ever really been a player that scored as much as he did early in his career that's kind of fallen off quite to the level that he has over these last 40 games. What do you see when you watch Elias Pettersson?
Well, his game needs to continue to evolve, I think. The book's out on him. He's got to keep changing his game. He's got to find new ways to be effective. Some of the old tricks that he had in his bag, people have seen him over the last couple of years. He's got to continue to increase his pace, I think, is a big one. Drive his legs a little bit more. He likes the fancy stick handling, but a little bit more direct. Like you said, like even just shooting the puck, it must kill the coaching staff to see him pass shots up. Like,
right.
When you shoot the puck like that, like, you should be, a shoot first player. It's tough. I think with the weight of the contract kind of in his rear view mirror, things should be better for him this year. I think he's got to find some consistent line mates that work well for him. I think he's had a little trouble there, but like I said, he's one of those guys that I mentioned before that, the team's looking for him to take a hold of games, to really grab the game, to be that guy that drives the engine. And the Canucks won't go too far without him being that type of player.
Higgy, we appreciate your time as always. Take it easy on me out there this weekend if you see me, all right?
All right, guys, thanks so much.
There is Chris Higgins, great former Vancouver Canuck, joining us here tableside, the Canucks Autism Network. Pro-Am Draft Night is about to get underway. Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, we're going to be emceeing the draft this evening, so we're excited about that. It's, again, an incredible cause, CanucksAutism.ca, if you'd like to be part of the donations and a part of the giving for the Canucks Autism Network.
Yeah, well said. It's a great night. Can't wait to get going with the draft here. And, you can always learn more. Go to CanucksAutism.com.
And we're going to be interested to see who goes first overall in the draft. I can imagine it might be Matthew Barnaby, maybe a guy like Higgy, but it's probably Ryan Kessler, who we'll see somewhere tonight as well. for producers Josh and Arash back at Mission Control in Vancouver. My co-host Sat, I'm Dan. You've been listening to Canuck Central.